Hello, hello, and welcome to Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. And if that's not difficult enough, while it's in the cocoon, it has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough when it gets out of the cocoon for it to be able to fly. I can't imagine that any of that is easy, but neither is busting through those limits that society places upon you. Today, I have a guest that has 5 children who all have special needs, and she herself became a person with special needs some time ago. And so she's going to share all about her experiences, both as a parent. Oh, and by the way, she's also a teacher. And so she's going to share some of the experiences that she's had as a teacher. And then as a person, like I said, herself, who has become someone who needs some accommodation. So Jennifer, thank you for joining me today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, like you said, I am or was a teacher. Since 2001, I have been teaching, and I started out in language arts, and then I became a single mom before I got my degree. So I was a single mom and a teacher at first, and wow, was that tough. As an English teacher, I was teaching in a really small school district, so I taught grades 5 through 12, language arts. Oh, wow. I also had the play and extracurricular speech, and I was also the part-time guidance counselor, and I did guidance counseling classes for grades 1 through 5. So,
oh, my word.
I did that for a couple of years, and I was like, yeah. So I probably would have stayed there forever, because honestly, I'm one of those people would like to die on the saddle kind of thing. And I didn't realize exactly like how bad it had gotten until it kind of was really bad. But I ended up moving over here to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where I live now, this area. And I worked for ACT for a couple of years, and I got so bored without any human interaction. And I'm a total introvert. So I feel like I could just live in this room right here and just stay here forever. A lot of the right. time I'm just like, yeah, nope, everyone else just stay out there. I'm good. But that's not the truth, as I really missed people, and I loved the interaction and being able to help people. So I ended up going back to teaching, and because I was in this area and it was a much bigger area and we're by the U of I with the English program, and I didn't have my foot in the door anywhere, I ended up subbing. So I subbed for a couple of years, and I took anything that came my way to get my foot in the door in all the schools around here. So I taught in all the schools around here. I did a whole bunch of long-term subs for English, but I also did a bunch of long-term subbing for special ed. And that was my first kind of taste of special ed and what it meant. I sort of had experienced a little bit with my daughter already, but I didn't have a clue like what was going on. Mm-hmm. And my then boyfriend and now husband also had a daughter with severe Downs and son with ADHD and stuff, anxiety and all that. So we were both kind of dealing with it. But as a parent, you have a much different view of special ed than as a teacher. It's mm-hmm. so different. And so I got into autism. I did a long-term sub job for an autism teacher who couldn't get anyone to sub for her because she had some violent kids. And that was the most amazing experience in teaching, like the most transformative thing. I was like, where has this been my whole life? I learned so much from the paraprofessionals, from the kids, and from her. Because I came in 2 weeks early because I told her, I was like, look, what you're asking sounds like something I have never done. and I have no idea how to do it. So I need to come in and like shadow you for a while, and you need to show me exactly what you do and how your lesson plans work, and show me the routine so that I can figure it out. When I get in there and I see your lesson plans, I'm not like completely overwhelmed and going, I can't do this.
Right.
So I did. I came in 2 weeks early, and I shadowed her all day long for 2 weeks. And then I took over for her, and I did a couple of long-term sub jobs for her and for other special ed teachers. But that was kind of the turning point in my teaching career. So then I went back to school, got my special ed degree over a period of years. I got hired at Linmar in 2009 to do middle school autism. And I was there for 8 years. And then they kind of bumped me down to elementary because I'd had 5 concussions. And the fifth concussion kind of kept me out of school for like 3 months. While I wasn't really out of school, they had me doing light duty, but I wasn't able to be in my classroom. Thankfully, right. I had a student teacher who I'd also had as a field experience student. So he was able to, he knew the routines, and I could just give him the lesson plans, and like he could consult with me in between if he needed to. But then I didn't have contact with the students.
Right.
Putting myself at risk, and he was doing the classroom stuff. I was doing all the paperwork, which is the worst end of teaching.
Yes. And with a concussion, I'm not sure which would be better, the actual day or the sitting around looking and doing all the paperwork all the time.
Well, and when you have a concussion, you know, your brain is all like,
right.
So like my ability to focus, I was lucky to get lesson plans done and like get the data recorded every day, I think. And people stopped in a lot into the room that I was in to check on me and say hi and whatever. And so those were the highlights of my day, because entering data and writing lesson plans are okay, but entering data is like the bane of my existence. So, yeah, it's so monotonous and not creative. And I love being creative. That was part I really loved about special ed, was being able to see the transformation that could happen with the right supports. But being able to like think outside the box and come up with new ways of doing things, and really like getting to know a kid on such a level that you could predict or try, you know, you'd have some ideas about what would work specifically for that kid. And autism makes people so unique. Like, people are so unique anyway.
Right.
Okay. And I'm actually a firm believer that we're all on the spectrum somewhere. Now that I've taught in autism for long enough, I'm pretty sure we're all there. But, you know, with diagnosed autism, those kids are different from your regular kids walking around in the hall in some different ways. So like figuring out how they're the same and how they're not was part of the fun of it. Like, what little quirks do you have that I can help you either overcome or use? And you kind of had to figure out which was which, like what things are holding this kid back and what things can this kid do that are actually quite extraordinary, you know, or endearing, or just joyful. And I absolutely loved being an autism teacher, but I cannot do it anymore. I've had 8 concussions now.
Oh my gosh.
Number 7 was the one that took me out of teaching, basically. At least for now. Like, maybe someday I'll be able to go back, but it's been 3 years and I'm still not to a level of being able to focus long enough. Or it's really bad. I hate admitting it, but it has affected my patience. Mm-hmm. Like, it extremely affected my self-control and patience at first. Because when you have that many concussions, and, you know, they're not all the same and they don't always get worse. Like, I had some that were pretty mild, that I was over them in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I had some that took me out for a month or 2 months or 3 months, but I always got better. And so my expectation when number 7 happened was, it's going to be bad for a little while, but I'll go to therapy and then I'll be better. I'll be fine. I'll get through it. You know, don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Right. You know, I'm very independent to a fault, and I don't like it. I don't like having pity, and I don't like, you know, feeling like I can't do what I normally do. And I tried to go back and teach immediately after number 7. And I stayed there for a couple of weeks, and I had to keep taking days off in the middle of the week because my migraines were so bad. I was having them all day, every day. It was like popping migraine meds all day long.
That's not good.
Yeah. And it was still wasn't like, I was just barely functional. I had 9 paraprofessionals at that time.
Oh my word.
10 kids in my elementary autism classroom. And, I would say 3 of them for sure were volatile and aggressive. And so I went back to that classroom and tried to teach. And my parents tried to protect me and keep me out of any situation that was maybe going iffy. They also like covered for me and kept me on track. Like it was terrible. They didn't even notice as much as I did. I knew how much that was the worst part was I could see it. I could see how far off I was. Some of the time it was just crystal clear to me. Like I am so far gone that I've had to be redirected 25 times in my own lesson.
Wow.
You know? And I could see it. And because there were so many of them, they didn't notice it as much as I did because they all were doing it at different times.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I would have 3 with me in this group and one of them was keeping me on track and the other 2 were so focused on their kids, they didn't even notice that.
Right.
You know, because their kids are like just very intensive. So then the group would change and I would either have another group or I'd have an individual kid to myself. So I'd be by myself with that kid and the para would be in the room, maybe doing something, or maybe the para wasn't even there.
Right.
No, to supervise me. And I kind of needed it at that point. But anyway, long story short, I eventually told them, well, actually I was told by my therapist that if I continued to go back to work, I would never get better, that I would only get worse, that I had gone downhill significantly since I went back to work after the concussion. And they'd been measuring all of these, you know, vestibular things for me. I mean, they weren't able to measure the fuzziness or the ADHD end of it. They were only measuring my vestibular problems and my vision problems. And they were getting worse because I kept on going back and trying to force myself to do all this work. And I was working 60 to 80 hour weeks at that point. So, it was not a good situation. I was told I had to be at home and be off work until they released me. And when I told the people at school, I'm like, guys, they're kind of right because I can't even like stay on task for 5 seconds.
Wow.
You guys are redirecting me all day long. I said, you guys are essentially doing all my work during the day. And then I'm trying to do paperwork after that at night when I'm tired. And, you know, I've had migraines all day and everything. And I was like, it's just not working. And so I have to. And so I had come in to give them my lesson plans and stuff. And they were like, we didn't even notice. Like, how did you not notice? Then I thought about it. It's like, because they only saw me for 20 minutes a day, you know?
Right.
But I think they were being nice to me too. I think they noticed and they just wanted me to feel better. But
So there's a couple things.
I just didn't get it at that point. That could be possible. So after that, I have not been back to work. I have not been able to get back to that point where I can go back to work. So
let me just stop you there. Let you catch your breath a little bit. So there's some things that you said in there that I want to key on. And this one wasn't something you said, but I just wanted to say hi to Fran. Fran is joining us from Southern Illinois today live. So welcome, Fran. And Fran, I have another show with called Friday with Fran. And she is also someone who has had a series of concussions and has found herself in a similar situation to yours, where she is finding out what it's like to be that person who now needs those accommodations. She has also raised children who are now adults who have had disabilities or who have disabilities. And so I should maybe introduce the two of you.
Oh, hi, Fran. Yeah.
You guys have a lot of things in common. But so there's just, like I said, there's a few things that you mentioned that I wanted to touch on. So the first one I want to touch on, and this one is very, very important, and I want to make sure that I don't forget this, is you had a classroom full of children who had autism, and you've talked about, you know, how aggressive they were. I want to clear up for anybody who's watching that just because the child has autism does not automatically mean that they are going to have serious aggressive tendencies.
And even if they do, I want to just say too that I told my administrators to give me the hard kids,
right?
That nobody else wanted. Those were the kids I wanted, and so I set myself up for what happened. But no, that was a lot of my head being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, and not all of my 8 concussions were from kids. So I had 6 of my 8 were from the classroom, but 1 was from my dogs, and 1 I did to myself while I was chopping up a lilac tree this summer and put a branch into my eye. So, but once you've had 1 concussion, mm-hmm. you become more susceptible to getting more concussions very easily. Oh, so like after my first concussion, which was pretty severe, it didn't take much to give me a concussion after that. So like hits that normally would not have hurt anybody mm-hmm. hurt me because of that. So that was not even like, it sounds much worse. Like the situation sounds much worse than it was. I love those kids. And they had no clue what they were like. They sometimes knew they were trying to hurt me, but sometimes they didn't know what they were capable of hurting. Like they didn't know the extent of what they could do. They just knew they were angry, you know, and they didn't have a good coping skill. And people with autism are my favorite people in the entire world. I have to say that. And I just want everyone to appreciate that. I'm pretty sure there's been times where people have slammed a car door, slammed their door, you know, pounded a counter or whatever. And we don't call you aggressive necessarily.
Exactly.
But kids with autism who are releasing the same kind of feelings and may not have the level of understanding that is normal for their age. So they're reacting like a 3-year-old would react to a situation, but they're actually in middle school, so or in high school. And so when they get angry with someone, sometimes they lash out physically, and they don't have a concept of the damage that they can do usually when they're doing that. And I had one student who she did it because she was frustrated that she could not communicate with the people she really wanted to talk to. And so she would hit them because she would be festering in the corner and no one would say hi to her. No one was like interacting with her. Or even if they did interact with her, she couldn't follow up with anything other than hi and kind of some echolalia stuff. And it was so frustrating to her, and she just had nowhere to go with it. And she has made enormous strides since then. Just an amazing kid with an amazing mind. And once you start to understand how to communicate with her, you can help her communicate with you. And the stuff you find out is just so amazing. So anyway, I don't want to scare anybody away from autism. I would encourage you, if you know somebody who has autism, to get to know them because they are amazing. Autism, I am a person who is not sure that autism needs to be cured. Let's put it that way. Lot of people are looking for cures or ways to help people with autism. And I think that to a point, that's good, helping to manage some of the symptoms that hold them back from being able to express themselves might be good. But at the same time, autism gives them something that the rest of us don't have. And it is a different way of viewing the world and experiencing the world. And it is so unique for each one of them, what they see, what they focus on, and what it's just the depth that they can go into and tell you when they can communicate. It's just wow. And the ones that can't communicate, I always wanted them to be able to communicate because I wanted to know what was going on in there. Exactly. Because when you get to know them, you can see that there's so much more going on in there than what you would expect when you first see them and their behaviors and you level or that kid's functioning at a baby level or whatever. They can't understand what I'm saying. They don't know what's going on around them. They don't know this or they don't know that. And you're assuming that. Mm-hmm. But just because someone can't talk doesn't mean they can't think.
And exactly.
They do. Even the ones that are at a lower comprehension level still understand things so well from watching people. And they have become master manipulators, a lot of them. But a lot of them, it's because they're so perceptive that they're able to manipulate us. And we don't even notice that they're doing it until we're looking for it. And so that's an intelligence of itself. It's a people intelligence. And autism is supposed to cut you off from social cues and you're not catching on to the social cues. So you would think that they couldn't understand people at all. And that is not true either.
Right.
Some of them understand feelings better than most people. They have a level of empathy that is enormous. I met some kids with autism that put me to shame in that category. They were just so amazingly empathetic with other people.
Yeah.
And they could tell you right away when someone was upset and that person might be putting on a really good everyday face and they're like, something's wrong, you know, and they would get it out of you too. And they're the most truthful people I've ever met. Like autism, because they don't take other people's perspective sometimes, and also empathy and perspective taking are sometimes not the same either. So there is a lot of jumbled up stuff going on. And that's part of the reason I love autism is just so much uniqueness. And when you meet one person with autism and you get to know them and figure that out with them, you'll just be amazed. But then you'll meet another person with autism and you'll be expecting some of the same things and it'll just blow you away how different they are.
Yes. But
it's always, to me, been beautiful and amazing. And I wish the world could see what I had seen while I was in the classroom with those kids. Our room was the best room to be in. And those kids were a blessing to everyone around them every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I may have made it sound bad because I have all these concussions, but please understand that part of that is my head is a glass head. And part of that is just they were learning things. And because they're learning, they get frustrated a lot. And stuff happens. So,
right. Yeah. So Fran has a comment here.
Go ahead.
And behavior is communication. So exactly, you know, she mentioned that when you were talking about, you know, there oftentimes you were talking about the young lady in the corner, you know, that she had a lot to say, but didn't quite know how to get it out yet.
Right. Verbally get it out yet. Yep.
Yeah. And then her second comment here is that everyone is an individual unto themselves. And I so appreciate what you are saying, because you and we've not had a conversation before. I mean, yes, we have a mutual friend and we've been in meetings with her, but you and I have not really sat down and discussed anything ever before. But we are so similar, because I very much wholeheartedly agree with the things that you're saying about getting to know each student and getting to figure out each student. And that's one of the things that I think I loved the most about special education, was that we're kind of like investigators. You know, like, what is it that's causing that behavior? What is it that is driving this way of thinking, or, you know, this style of looking at the world? And how do I not change the person, because the person is who they are and they deserve to be that person, but how do I help the world connect and appreciate that person too? And yes, you know, it's just, we're so much alike in that. And I'm not in the classroom either anymore, but that is definitely something that I miss. And I agree with you. My classroom was the best place to be in the school, because we had so much love and so much joy and growth and fun and empathy. And, you know, I had students that had all, at some point in my career, I have worked with every eligibility that makes someone eligible for special education. But so I had opportunity to work with all kinds of different students that had different diagnoses of things or different eligibilities of things. And even those kids who had the extreme behaviors, and I didn't have a classroom of just children with autism, like I said. So, you know, behaviors come with lots of different things.
Oh, yeah.
And while the kids were in my classroom, and even when I would see them out with their gen ed peers, you know, it was an amazing feeling to know the connection, and making that connection and having that relationship that is so personal. And that's, I think, one of the great aspects of special education, is it is smaller, or it's supposed to be smaller. It's not always in a smaller
I was going to say not anymore, but
but you do have a little bit more opportunity to really get to know the students and their ins and outs and likes and dislikes, and, you know, what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And it is our, I don't consider myself a creative person unless it has to do with education. When I think about creativity, you know, I think about artists and musicians and people who are crafty, and, you know, but people have said to me, no, you're very creative in how you ran your classroom and what you do with your students and ideas that you come up with now as a master IEP coach. So maybe that is something that is a thread amongst special education teachers. And that is what our expertise is in, I guess, is accommodating, modifying, differentiating.
Solving problems.
Yeah.
We solve problems. And those, you know, if you come from the more logical side of things and not the creative side of things, it's still kind of the same thing, because you're solving problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the creativity that's involved is logical to some extent. And because we're teachers and we really want to see our kids grow, we both have that same kind of sympathy and empathy going on for the student, and trying to get to know them is one of the things we want to do, so that we do that problem solving on their level for them, and that it's appropriate. So, I mean, it is the same thing. It's creative, but it's solving problems. And so right. you're applying logic, but you're also applying creativity. And for me, I liked that it had some routine, but I also liked that it didn't.
Right.
Because, you
right.
know,
yeah.
You never get bored with your routine. You had a routine.
Right.
Sort of. You have a routine on paper, an expectation of a routine. And, you know, you have routines for your lessons and things, but it always looked different. So for each kid, I got to do a different kind of version of the lesson, or a different lesson altogether. And one of the things that I didn't like when I was a language arts teacher, I taught in Storm Lake for a year, and that was my first year of teaching, and it was eye-opening. I taught the same grade. I've taught eighth grade English all day long. Oh. And by halfway through the day, I was so tired of doing the same lesson again. Yep. That I just was like, oh, how many hours until the end of the day, you know?
Right.
And by the end of the day, I had perfected the lesson. Like, I could roll that sucker out without any mistakes. And it, you know, I'd already troubleshot all the little problems that go on, you know, right. So by the end of the day, I had a great lesson, but I was so tired of it. Like,
right.
It's also monotonous. It was just not quite enough. Not quite enough problem solving during the day, not quite enough interaction with like different kids. And that's what I really loved. And that's kind of why I got into guidance counseling too. I did go to college for guidance counseling for a year while I was doing all this stuff with, you know, the tiny.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Because why be bored or have any downtime?
Why would I want any downtime or any time at all for anything other than school? So, I went to college for that. And it was because while I was teaching language arts for all these different grades in middle school, I didn't think I was going to like middle school, but middle school turns out to be my favorite.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
I really love middle school because it's such a time of change for kids, and they really kind of struggle through it, you know, but they're still open to being guided. So high school, I love being able to talk to high school kids. And having the maturity to have a really in-depth conversation. I just love that about them. But they're a lot less open to advice or steering from a teacher and much more open to steering from peers. So middle school is kind of that happy medium between high school and elementary where they're changing a lot and they're becoming mature, but they still are looking for advice and guidance from teachers. So it's just an opportunity.
How do all of these skills help you in parenting five children who all have?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, all right. So in my family right now, I have, like you said, five kids. The oldest two are my husband's from his previous marriage, and their mom has passed away about 5 or 6 years ago. Actually, it might be more than that now. Anyway, so she's not in the picture anymore. The next two are mine from my previous marriage, which was abusive with an alcoholic. And so he's not really in the picture anymore. So we had those four as a blended family for a little while. And then we now have a 12-year-old who is at the bottom, like 15 years younger than everybody else. So yeah, we have a 27, 26, 25, 24, and 12.
Oh, wow.
And the 26-year-old has severe Downs.
Okay.
And she's at dayhab right now. She still lives with us. And the 27-year-old is the one I was telling you about, has ADHD, depression. He thinks he's bipolar. Okay. Looking back over his life over the last few years, I would tend to agree that that might be a possibility, and he may need to go get that figured out. But because of his ADHD and everything else that's going on with him,
right,
following through on a plan is actually not one of his fortes. Right. So he is a 27-year-old with his own home that his mom left to him in her will. And he is struggling to not have that foreclosed upon and struggling to pay his bills and things because of his poor executive functioning skills. So he's struggling to be an adult. And the 26-year-old, like I said, lives with us. The 25-year-old, my oldest daughter, we discovered that she had severe anxiety disorder, or I discovered that when she was about 8. She started going to school and everything. And the first grade teacher called me into her room after school. And this is at that tiny little school district. So it was one building. We were all in the same building together. So I walked down the hall and found the first grade room to go talk to the first grade teacher after school. And my daughter's desk was one of those where you lift up the top and your supplies are in the inside.
Okay.
She could not close it because she had stuffed it full of her assignments that were finished assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Crumpled up, shoved in there. Lots of little shiny things that she had collected from the playground, from other people's desks, from the teacher's desk, from everywhere. Shiny little stuff. She was a little dragon put in there. This could be shards of glass. We're not talking like it was all safe. It wasn't.
Okay. Wow.
And also every pair of socks that she'd worn for like a month. I'm wondering where they were going. Well, they were going to school and ending up in her desk. So she had stinky socks, a whole bunch of shiny stuff, and wadded of papers. And her desk was 4 inches from closing.
Wow.
And so I made her clean all that out. And that was kind of our first clue that something was really not doing well. And we weren't sure what it was, but looked like ADHD at first. Mm-hmm. Eventually found out it was severe anxiety disorder. And since then, we've also kind of had some more diagnoses pop up. As an adult, she got ADHD added onto that. She was recently diagnosed with glaucoma, and she's 25.
Wow. Fran, see, I really do need to introduce you to Fran, because she said your daughter that you're describing sounds like her daughter.
Yeah, it's tough. And then there was, I think that I missed as she was growing up, because I didn't know enough about it then, that she also has dyslexia and possibly dysgraphia. And so she's really struggled with school her entire life. Just she wanted so many friends, and she was always trying too hard to get friends and doing things that, you know, she was easy to kind of influence from friends. So she ended up kind of struggling because she was putting all of her effort into the friend arena and not enough into academics. And academics were so frustrating for her. And every night I remember sitting with her and trying to do spelling, and she and both of us just wanted to die by the end of 10 spelling words. And, you know, there were other things like finishing assignments and getting them turned in, and planning ahead for long projects, and, you know, all that stuff. Just big struggle all the way through school. She has been through 3 different colleges now and not finished any of them. And she's also struggling to adult, going through a really ugly divorce. And she has I have 3 grandkids that are all hers. They are 6, 4, and soon to be 2. Wow. And there was a 4th one. He passed away as an infant. He was born at 22 weeks. And so, she's had a really rough life, and it is not letting up yet. So it's still pretty stressful around here with trying to help her through her things. And then our 24-year-old is probably our most functional child right now. He has anxiety disorder, but it's pretty mild. And we only found out because he wanted to know why he was okay. Is my fault, I'm going to say, because as a parent who was an autism teacher, I came home to my son, who is a very strong introvert, a hermit, and very routine-based and very rigid about rules and things. And so he would just make comments or say things occasionally and be like, I would say to him, sometimes, Kyle, I mean, I know I'm on the spectrum, but I'm pretty sure you're there with me. I said, some of the things you're doing are just like the kids in my class who have Asperger's. And he would ask me, like, why do people not like it when I'm whatever? And I'm like, you don't know why they don't like it, you know? Yeah. So it looked, he has a way of speaking his mind too, that is very blunt. So I kind of planted a seed in his mind that he might have Asperger's, and I didn't realize that I had done it, but I did.
Right. Sure.
And so then he wanted to know. So I took him to the U of I, and he went through the whole screening process, was very involved. And they came back and they're like, no, you're not. You don't have Asperger's, but you do have a mild anxiety disorder. And it's so mild that you can choose to, you know, choose if you want to do counseling, or if you wanted to try medication, you could. It depends on how you feel it's affecting you. If you feel like you're doing okay, then I'm going to believe you. It's okay. You don't need anything. And so put his fears to rest about himself, and knowing what he had, kind of, he did some research on his own and discovered what things would help him. And he has done that all independently since then. So he has never been through counseling or anything else, and he's doing great in the Air Force. He's been promoted 5 times in the last 2 years. He's now a staff sergeant.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's doing great. And he's the one that's able to plan ahead and actually follow through on the plan because of his rigid,
right?
Like, this is the way it's got to be.
Yeah,
he imposes that on himself.
Right.
And so he has very good self-control. And he's always been, like I said, a very hermity kind of guy. So his struggle is actually dealing with new people. And he has, you know, 3 crew members underneath him right now that he's in charge of, and he struggles with kind of being able to motivate them to do things the way he feels they should be done. And he, like I said, he's very rigid and very blunt. So, like,
yeah,
he's had some run-ins with a few people about that. But like I said, he's been promoted 5 times, so he's not doing that badly. And he's building computers in his free time. He's currently building a computer into a desk for himself so that all the workings of it are under the glass, which will be on the top of the desk. And so you can watch the computer run.
Oh, and wow.
You know, the liquid cooling system and everything. Yeah. He's done this before, but he hasn't built it into a desk. So this time he's building it into a desk. He saved $7,000 to make this build. Wow. And he has $10,000 extra in savings. So, like, that's the kid I'm not worried about very much. And he's in England right now. And then there's a 12-year-old. She has anxiety disorder. She does okay. She reminds me of her older sister in some scary ways with her impressionability and following after friends and the things that they've gotten her into occasionally. Like, I think I am sometimes having deja vu with that one, and it scares me. Like, I hope that when she grows up, she doesn't end up struggling as much as the other one did.
Sure.
She's doing better academically. So academically, she's fairly gifted, actually. So she's not struggling with dyslexia or dysgraphia. She's an extremely fast reader, and so that part is different, and that may stand her in good stead when she grows up. But the anxiety part and the social part are still kind of worrisome. And so we're dealing with that and dealing with, like, she has things she does as a coping mechanism that have gotten her into trouble so many times. So when she was younger, it was origami. So she learned how to do origami, taught herself. And she was doing origami and paper crafts, like cutting and pasting paper into all sorts of things. She would build computers, cell phones, whatever, out of paper.
Wow.
And be playing with those throughout the school day. So it started out with the cutting and pasting, turned into origami, and it was origami 100% of the day, all day long. So while the teacher was talking, while she was supposed to be working, she would usually get her assignment done too, but she was always doing origami. And so, yeah, the origami we ended up cutting out, and then I don't even remember what we did, but I think we had basically told her no more origami at school at all. And it took some, like, talking back and forth with the teacher to, we set up a reward system for, like, and we had to give her replacement behaviors and other things to try to get her through there. And she went to counseling and, you know, did CBT for a while. And then COVID hit and she was at home with me. And she shifted somewhere in there. One of her replacement behaviors may have been drawing, and now she's an incredible artist, but drawing has replaced origami.
Okay.
So we just had conferences and I heard from every single teacher that she's drawing all the time when she should be doing other things, or she's, you know, not doing as good on her work as she could that they know she's capable of, because she's rushing through it so that she can draw some more.
Right.
So yeah, so she gets so, like, focused on that one thing. So that's what we're struggling with her. So those are my 5 kids that I have. Lots of ADHD, lots of anxiety, lots, the older ones have depression. And then we have severe down. So when you ask me, how does that affect my teaching? They have been my connection with other parents in special ed. Okay. They've taught me a lot about how parents feel when their kids go to school, you know, and struggle. And so I think that parents that have kids that don't struggle that much don't have the same perspective. So like teachers that have fairly neurotypical kids don't understand to the same depth. They may understand a little bit, but they don't have the same depth of understanding of how you feel when you know your kid is going to struggle to make friends, to be successful, to in academics, to be able to do any kind of co-curricular activity. When you know your kid is going to struggle, it is so disheartening. And you worry about it. And in free moments, you know, you're sitting here, you're going to eat your lunch, and suddenly you're worried about your kid. And just hoping that they have a friend to eat with, or that the friend that they have is not going to lead them into a life of drugs, you know?
Right. No, absolutely.
You're thinking my kid is more likely than 9/10 of the other kids in that school building to end up doing drugs. My kid is more likely to fail. My kid is more likely to never get a good job. My kid may never understand how to get along with other people so that they can keep a good job. Even though they're capable of a good job, their social aspect is going to destroy it.
Right.
You know, so you've got all these extra worries that you're carrying into your life. And I carried that to school for sure as a language arts teacher. And I wondered what I was doing wrong. This was before I got into special ed. I just wondered, what am I doing wrong? I'm a teacher, for God's sake. I should be able to put systems in place at home that would support my kids in being more successful. And what am I doing wrong? I'm doing their homework with them every night. I'm not like feeding them the answers or anything. I make them figure it out. I'm reteaching everything the teacher taught. You know, I'm trying to put these motivational systems in place for them. But, you know, as a stressed out parent who's working 9,000 hours a week, consistency at home was definitely not what it was at school. And school and home are just so different. They're different beasts completely. Yeah. And so I was judging myself by a school standard at home. And that's one of the most important lessons that I could pass on to another parent, is to not judge yourself, not to judge your home by a special ed classroom or by a school standard. Because your home is not a school.
Right.
Or if it is, it's a different kind of school, you know, but right. Yeah. It doesn't operate on a schedule that is set in stone like a school does. You know, school has periods during the day. You right. are going to lunch at a certain time. And if you don't, because of whatever, because you're in special ed and we can do that, you still have a time. Like, it's still a set thing that's going to happen. And right. it will be made to happen. And I don't know. Home is just more chaotic, more unexpected. Things happen. It's less controlled. You have less background and less help and fewer experts to call upon, you know, in that time of need. Like if something happened at school, per se, I could walk down the hall and ask for help. I could even yell for help to the para that's right there. I can, you know, say, what do you think about this? How should we handle this situation? But at home, you're standing there in the middle of the situation. Your emotions are high because it's your kid.
Yeah.
You know, at school, they're your kids too. As a teacher, I like adopted them all into my family officially, you know, but when it's your kid at home, the stakes are high, very high. And there's no way to dissociate yourself from your kid and their success or failure. So as a teacher, to some extent, you can say, well, their home life, or, well, you know, I'm not responsible for their disability, or I'm not, you know, I can't control all the pieces, therefore I'm not responsible for the entire picture. I don't know if you know what I'm saying, but it's kind of like there's just that tiny little bit that you can dissociate yourself from a kid at school and their success. If they're failing or if something's going horribly wrong, you're able to step back and take a look at the whole picture and say, look at all these factors, take a breath, figure it out with somebody, and come back the next day with a better plan. You know, you're not so stuck in the moment and tied to that success or failure in that moment, because as a parent, it feels like every moment is the moment. And it feels like when you're in a situation, you're the only one there. And you're like, even if your husband or wife is there, sometimes you still feel alone. Like you're the one making that decision. You're the one making the call. You're also the emotional one. And you're so, you know, the stakes are so high that your emotions are just, and your head and your clarity is not. So you're not making the same kinds of decisions that you would make at school. Let's put it that way. So my kids, unfortunately, you would think that as a teacher, my kids would just be so blessed to have a teacher for a mom. But it was the worst thing for them, I think. Like, in some ways it was good. In some ways I was still able to do things that other parents might not have had the, you know-how or whatever, the information. I was blessed with information and the ability to use it, strategies and the ability to use them, but my implementation of them at home looked nothing like it did at school.
Right.
Because I came home tired. I came home impatient. I was worn out. Everything was overwhelming at that point. And so every little thing that they did seemed like it was huge. I'm pretty sure I overcorrected a lot. My husband did a lot of the parenting on his own sometimes because I was at school. And then when I came home, you know, my kids wanted more attention than I had left over to give. So they taught me a lot about the differences between home and school. And they also taught me about the importance of spending time with your family. And the impact you can have as a parent. And I think I did a better job with impact at school than I did at home, but I still had a pretty good impact at home, apparently, because my kids are still telling me that, but you know,
so is all of the stuff that you're talking about now, all that stress, all of that being unable to disassociate sometimes, is that what led to the special needs spa?
Yes, that is in fact what led to the special needs spa, because as I talked to other special ed teachers, other therapists that work at school, SLPs and PTs and such, they're all overwhelmed. We were all like, I wish I had another me. I don't have time to train someone to do these things because by the time I've trained them, I might as well have done it myself. And I'm going to have to keep following up with them to make sure they're doing it right. Probably going to have to redo it. I don't have time for that right now. And you never do. Right. You just never get that time. Or if you do, you get one person trained. And so you have one person trained. It seems like you needed all nine of your paraprofessionals to be able to do your job in case you have a heart attack. But
eighth concussion.
Right, or an eighth concussion. And, you know, you all have to be able to fill in for each other. So to some extent, they did get trained. They did know all these things, but it was just overwhelming. You always felt guilty. You were either ignoring your family or you were not doing enough at school or both. In my case, it felt like both. Like I wasn't giving enough time to my family because they had all these needs. And I wasn't, like for Sabrina, the one with Down syndrome, I was not implementing at home what I knew I needed to implement with the visuals, you know, like she needed a visual schedule like 2 years before I got her one. She needed a different AAC system than what the school was giving her like 7 years before she got one. It needed to be personalized more, like all the time continuously. And it wasn't. Even now, like, I know that I need to make this visual for her that says, pull your sleeves up and put it by the sink, because when she goes to rinse her dishes, she leaves her sleeves down here.
Yep.
And soaks her arm to the armpit.
Gotcha.
While playing in the water, rinsing dishes. So she just needs that visual. How long does it take to make that? It takes like 1 minute to make that, print it, and maybe, you know, 10 minutes to laminate it and stick it to the thing by the sink. Have I done it? And I'm here all day. I feel like a terrible parent sometimes. At school, I won awards for all the wonderful things that I did, you know, in my classroom. And so these parents are like, what do you do at home? Like, I want to know what you do at home with your kids because you're so amazing at school. I'm like, dude, you're amazing parents. you're doing a better job with your kid than I'm doing with my kid at home. I want you to know that, because you're taking the time to implement these visuals I'm giving you at home. And you're wondering how to do it. And you're doing it right now. I said, it's a process. And that's another thing I would say to a parent is, one of the things that overwhelmed me was trying to do it all at once. Like, I wanted the whole system from school moved to home now.
Right. Well, yeah. If something's working, we absolutely want to implement it as quickly as possible. Thing. Yeah.
And I was impatient. Like, I didn't want to just do communication at supper time. I wanted that AAC throughout her day, all day long, everyone to use it, trained all my family members. And I'm like, we're using this, blah, 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 you know? Okay. So it doesn't work that way in home because it's chaotic and you don't have those set times or lessons to use it with.
Right. So and we just have a few minutes left, Jen. So let's talk really quickly. First of all, I think this is probably one of the most important things to say about the special needs spa is that it's truly not a spa.
No, it's not a real spa. It's a spa for your mind. The whole purpose behind it was for me, the trained person who can create whatever you want, whenever you want it. You don't have to train me. I will be that assistant for you, or I will teach you how to do it, because I've taught so many people how to do it on their own.
Right.
So I have lots of services such as, right now, none of it is on the a la carte page yet, but I'm going to be putting up a lot of free visuals and free schedule pieces and free things like that that you'll be able to download. But I have a customization service where you can, for like $1 a page, say, I want these things to be changed about this visual, or here's a visual that I really need somebody to make for me, and I'll make it for you, and then I'll send it to you. And I can also do some coaching. So if you just need somebody to talk you through it and be like, you are not alone. And here's one step you can make to make your life look a little less crazy right now. I would be happy to, you know, be that person for you. And if you want to find out if I'm worthwhile or not, there's free 15 minutes at a time. And you can use that more than once if you want to, you know, just schedule a time. I'll be happy to hang out with you and find out what you're struggling with and see what I can do to help, because that's what I love doing. And that's what I have been working on part-time while I've been healing is that. And then I also finished my book, which if you're looking for something to read over the Christmas and you like sci-fi, this is Christian Dystopian, and it has characters with disabilities in it. And basically one of the main themes, this book, I really wanted to write this book, which is going to be a trilogy, because of those kids that I worked with autism. I saw so much inside them that other people couldn't see. And one of the characters with autism in here turns out to have incredible abilities and in a way becomes kind of the savior of the protagonist. So, there's also characters that are not good, because people with autism are not angels. They're just people.
Right.
So they can be good or they can make bad choices too. So some of them make bad choices just like the rest of the characters. And I really wanted that to come through. Like, they're people like you and I, but they, you know, they're unique also like you and I, but they have their own uniqueness, and we don't always understand from their perspective what it's like or what's going on inside. And wouldn't it be great if we could? So this is about how we place value on other people's lives. And we all do it to some extent. Absolutely. Like, we look at that kid and be like, they're never going to have a job. And some people think because they'll never be able to contribute to society. I hate that phrase. They'll never be able to contribute to society by having a job, that they're not worth sustaining, or that it's okay to shove them in a corner and forget about them.
Right.
And that's the absolute worst thing that we could do.
We could have a whole long episode just talking about that. Unfortunately,
that's the theme of that book. So if you're looking for a fun read that has that kind of a theme, that's what that one is. It's called The Frozen. Okay. It's on Amazon. So,
and they can also get it from jenporterauthor.com. And that's Porter is spelled P-O-R-T-E-R. So jenporterauthor.com. And then I don't know if I put this one up at all during the episode. Specialneedsspa.com is where they can find those other resources that you mentioned just a few minutes ago. It's time, my new friend.
I could talk to you for hours, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I maybe should have been a little bit more pointed with, but yes, my main point is, man, I have such an appreciation for the struggles of people with autism and with other disabilities at this point. And I would encourage anybody to get to know somebody that has autism or a disability and to really try to understand from their point of view what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you will be blessed by knowing them. Absolutely. 100%. They're going to bring something to your life that was definitely not there. If you've never met anybody with a disability and really gotten to know them, they're going to widen your horizons so much.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So much. Yes. Yep. So,
and that's a lot of what my book is about, those who can't teach, because it's all true stories of special needs families to promote acceptance, inclusion, and empathy. And it's the same thing. If you allow yourself the opportunity to get to know someone who's different than you. And for me, that difference that I talk about is some sort of an eligibility for special education. But even if it's some other kind of difference, you're going to broaden your horizons and you're going to be blessed in ways that you didn't expect. And it's definitely worth your time. I have not been ever disappointed from getting to know someone who was different from me and going, oh, well, that was useless. You know,
I would say you may or may not click with them, because it's just like other people. Some of them are going to be your friends and some of them aren't. But I would never hold yourself back from getting to know somebody. They're always going to broaden your horizons and teach you something, even if you don't click. But if you do click, oh, my gosh, I can't even express the depth of blessing that is. It is
absolutely.
I still miss it so much, being able to be at school and have that with some kids every day. It's so much. So much that I can't describe.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things that I feel like you have to have gone through it or be going through it in order to really be able to understand the depth of the levels that you and I are referring to. I may have to have you back, because this was such a great conversation and the time flew by. And I really do think that you have so much more that you could share and talk about with our audience. If, like I said, if you want to get a hold of her, it's Special Needs Spa or jenporterauthor.com. Reach out to her. It sounds like she has amazing things to talk about and amazing resources. Join me next week. I'm planning on having an episode, although at this moment, I don't have a guest. I've got a few people in the works, but if there's not a live episode, I will replay an episode from the past. If I don't see you all, well, I know I won't see you now before Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everyone, because next week will be that hazy week between Christmas and New Year's where nobody really knows what day of the week it is or what's happening. So, Jen, thank you so much. And Fran, thank you for being with us today. It's been great getting to know you, and have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.